It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. I want to read you a story called Kuda Pandaka's Realization. It's a story about patience. One day, while the Buddha was residing at Jetavana Monastery, he was walking past the entrance and saw a single bhikkhu, that's a monk, crying loudly as others stood around him, laughing. The crying bhikkhu was named Kuda Pandaka. He was not an intelligent man, but the Buddha knew that he was good-hearted. The Buddha was sympathetic toward him and valued him very much. The Buddha asked Kuda Pandaka, "Why are you here crying?" "Buddha," Kuda Pandaka replied, "I admit it, I'm just not so smart. I followed my brother here to be a bhikkhu, but when he tries to teach me something to memorize, I can't remember anything. He said I'm hopeless and told me to go back home today. He doesn't allow me to stay here anymore, so that's why I started crying. Please, Buddha, please help me." The Buddha kindly comforted Kuda Pandaka. "Is that so? Don't worry. Follow me to my place instead. Anyone who knows their own imperfections is truly wise. It is often those who talk about being smart who really aren't." After the Buddha returned to his quarters, he told Ananda to teach Kuda Pandaka. But Ananda later returned and lamented that he too was not up to the task. It was left for the Buddha to personally instruct Kuda Pandaka. The Buddha went to him and taught him to recite the phrase, "Sweep the dust away." But Kuda Pandaka was unable to remember even this. Everyone began to say that he has no hope to practice that way, but the Buddha would not forsake even a single being. The Buddha went to him again and said, "You should take a broom to sweep the grounds. Also help the other bhikkhus clean their robes and wipe off the dust of various things. And as you do these chores, you should recite the phrase I taught you." Kuda Pandaka practiced as the Buddha instructed him and served his fellow bhikkhus, but the others accused him of disturbing their practice and did not permit him to clean their possessions and robes. The Buddha addressed the monastic order and announced that these were his wishes. Afterwards, no one dared object to Kuda Pandaka's actions. Later, when Kuda Pandaka swept the floors, people began to feel compassion for him and calmly reminded him of the words, "Sweep the dust away." Kuda Pandaka was very diligent in his work. He wholeheartedly recited the verse until he memorized it. Over time and with practice, he slowly began to experience the meaning of these words. He thought, "Dust may be interpreted in two ways, internal dust and external dust. The external dust is dirt and stone easily swept away, but the internal dust is the suffering of greed, anger, and ignorance, which can only be swept away using great wisdom." When Kuda Pandaka finally came to understand this point, his mind began to grow clearer. He understood what he could not before. He thought, "Cravings are bad. The wise seek to eliminate them because if we don't end cravings, then the cycle of suffering will also continue. That's truly shameful. Cravings make the causes for various disasters. These disasters take away people's freedom. But when cravings end, the heart can grow pure, it can grow free, and we can see truth. Kuda Pantaka gave a calm and happy smile. He gradually let go of all the greed and anger in his mind and entered the state of equanimity, where he no longer let any of those negative states enter his mind and was not disturbed by any of the good or bad occurrences around him. He opened his mind and escaped the shell of ignorance. After Kuda Pantaka attained enlightenment, he joyfully went to the Buddha, bowed and said, "Buddha, I swept away the dust in my mind and finally understand." The Buddha was delighted and he praised Kuda Pantaka. The Buddha then turned to the assembly and said, "To recite the words of the teachings without understanding them is not sufficient. But if one takes a single verse, reflects upon it, and practices it in earnest, one will certainly see the path." See how Kuda Pantaka has achieved this. From that point on, Kuda Pantaka became a well-known bhikkhu of Jetavana Monastery. He was revered by many. However, he did not change his daily habits. He would still sweep the floors every day, all the while whispering, "Sweep the dust away." I have a strong feeling about this story. Once when I was suffering a lot physically, I invited a yoga teacher to come to my studio and teach me restorative yoga. Before this, I hadn't done yoga and really knew nothing about yoga. After a few months, she told me that her husband was starting a 3-year advanced yoga training and invited me to join, even though I was new. Later, I learned that he was teaching shadow yoga, a kind of yoga that revolves around a form. And a form is like a series of consecutive movements that you learn and you practice every day. And so that's what you do. You learn this form and you do it every day. And it was then that I discovered that as a result of trauma, my brain will not remember movements at all. Forget it. So soon I'm holding the whole class back. I'm still on movement number 1 and they're already on movement number 7. And what should I do? And even though a very kind friend offered to help me and go over these movements outside of class, as soon as we finished going over it, I forgot everything. I felt both foolish and hopeless. And the teacher was sneering and the other students just seemed irritated. I truly didn't know what to do. However, this class was started with over 30 students. And at the graduation, there were only 13, including me. So you might call this an example of patience, but it wasn't patience for learning this form. There was no way I was going to be able to. But like Kuda Pantaka, I was patient for attending the practice, even though I was a total failure, as everyone knew. And by then I had been studying Zen roughly 20 years. When I read the story of Kuda Pantaka, I feel like, you know, I'm Kuda Pantaka, I swear to God. It was really a terrible thing. Regarding this third paramita, the Kshanti Paramita. Kshanti means, in Sanskrit, having equilibrium. Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche says that in the Buddhist tradition, it means, I mean, this sounds so outrageous, honestly, but in the Buddhist tradition, this means that we're not to be perturbed by any samsaric conditions. So what does that mean? Samsara is the succession of rebirths that a being goes through until attaining enlightenment. So it means that any condition that comes up in our world, lifetime after lifetime, should not bother us at all. So that's the broad view. That's the ultimate truth view. And his analogy for patience is the ocean. Whatever happens, the ocean is not disturbed. It remains the same all the time. And another analogy is being willing to wait for the harmoniousness of a situation to arise by not correcting the disharmony. It's like waiting for good weather to happen. Picture yourself staring out the window on a rainy day. So you're going to allow the harmoniousness of the situation to happen on its own. And there's really nothing you can do about the disharmoniousness. For a Buddhist, patience means freedom from aggression. And the main obstacle to aggression is anger. According to the sutras, there is no greater evil than aggression, and there's no greater practice than patience. In Buddhism, it is thought that aggression is the most dangerous emotion because it does not allow any form of gentleness. Aggression is absolutely terrible, Rinpoche says. It is anti-Mahayana. Passion, lust, and desire may have qualities of neurosis, he goes on, and they may destroy your mindfulness and awareness, but at the same time, they have the nature of acceptance. Aggression is based on total rejection, whether it is aggression toward yourself or aggression toward other sentient beings. Still in all, when we see our own selves express anger or aggression, we don't criticize. Patience means to wait a minute, wait and see what happens. It means not coming to conclusions too quickly. So we're patient with ourselves first. We're patient with ourselves first. If we get angry, we're patient with our own anger first. Rinpoche continues, when you are angry, you reject both other people and yourself. At that point, you have no connection with the Dharma at all. When you lose your temper, you are so furious that you couldn't care less about the sacredness of anything. You couldn't care less about yourself or the other person or your teacher or your path. But if you reverse the logic, this is really neat. If you reverse the logic, when somebody is angry with you and you are patient with that person, you are creating 1,000 kalpas, which is an endlessly long time, of merit on the spot. When somebody is angry, that is your chance. This is Rinpoche talking. When someone is angry, that is your chance to be patient. You could breathe in the anger, and not only that, you could project goodness. But if you get angry in return, you lose it. Patience, however, is not, this is really an important point. Patience is not based on suppressing anger. sometimes aggression is absolutely legitimate. The point is to get rid of the anger part at the first possible moment. Rinpoche says, any method that quells aggression is valid. I think of Thich Nhat Hanh as the perfect example of someone who takes action against wrongdoings from a state of perfect equilibrium. You know, he'll be at a peace march, I think I've talked about this, and be doing kinin, you know, which is walking meditation. So he's being peace. He's being peace at the peace march. What could be more appropriate? Rinpoche goes on, overcoming aggression is not simply based on the moralistic approach of saying that you have been bad, so you had better be good. We develop patience and forbearance in order to maintain a quality of continual virtue. I'll read that again. We develop patience and forbearance in order to maintain the quality of continual virtue. So it's about the positive part of it. It's not about we shouldn't be angry or aggressive. It's about we want to develop a state of continual virtue. Such virtue is based on the idea of basic goodness and the sense that you are a worthy person, a healthy person. You are able to develop basic goodness and you have the potential to attain enlightenment and eventually to be a Buddha. From there, you can be of enormous help to all of the suffering in the world. You can be of enormous help to all of the suffering in the world from the state of enlightenment. In Buddhism, there are three categories of patience, and one of them is how to handle or manage other people's anger, realizing the nature of the basic nature of aggression, where does it come from, and examining oneself in these terms. The first two are related to the relative truth level of patience, and the last one has to do with ultimate truth. So the managing other people's aggression, if you react aggressively, you'll just encourage more aggression. So the suggestion is, if you give in to the person's aggression, then they don't have any point to address their aggression. So if they think like they're punching solid rock, they become more aggressive. But if they find that the rock is just a pile of balloons, then they start feeling their anger is absurd. So the way to manage, it's suggested in Buddhism that the way to manage other people's aggression is not to respond with aggression of your own, but to find a way to retract and not be aggressive back and to return to your own state of equilibrium and however that is expressed. Realizing the nature of aggression, it's said that people have aggression because they can't help themselves. They have no control over their minds, and their impatience is based on ignorance of suffering. Ignorance of suffering and the nature of suffering. And we can, when we're in the vicinity of something that makes us impatient, we can step back and look at the nature of suffering which is created by us and by others and by the situation. It's created by conditions, and the conditions are often ignorance, which is ignorance of the truth. So we don't, if we don't react, so we don't react unreasonably. We understand that suffering and its origin and the nature of aggression comes from ignorance. And so we can become more reasonable than people who have never heard of such things. We can be more analytical. We know, for example, about the Four Noble Truths, and that everything is suffering, and that there are causes for the suffering, which we lay down in previous lifetimes of poor behavior. But there's the cessation of suffering, which comes from the Eightfold Noble Path that Buddha spelled out. And we'll be talking about all of this in the new series that begins in January. In terms of examining ourselves, whenever we have an irritation, we should stop and examine all of our irritations individually, one by one. And if we do that, we'll see that they're empty, actually. By nature, we should constantly examine our irritations, the little things that happen to us that we see as bad, and include them in our practice of patience. Because in this way, all of this talk about patience can become real through actually doing it one by one, individually, with this little thing that happens and that little thing that happens. Just remembering that we have this possibility is helpful, that we can step back and examine the nature of suffering. Rinpoche says that discursive thoughts on the Dharma should be encouraged. I know we've had a lot of talk about how discursive thoughts prevent us from seeing reality, but apparently, if we have discursive thoughts on the Dharma, that's okay. On the whole, patience means working with any tiresomeness or discomfort brought about by being a Buddhist. Any tiresomeness or discomfort brought about being a Buddhist by holding the dharmic attitude of we're going to just be patient with all of these things just by being a Buddhist that are brought to us that aren't that comfortable. We develop patience just by holding that dharmic attitude. We try to handle everything as if it happens to us as part of our practice. So remember, everything that comes to us is a gift. This is exactly what this is saying. This is a gift. This irritating thing that's just happened, consider it a gift, because it's going to help me, one, to understand the nature of suffering and its impermanence, and it's going to give me an opportunity to practice patience. It's a chance, right? It's a chance. Shanti Davis says, patience is working on me, not me on it. Remember, Zazen does Zazen. It's not I do Zazen. It's Zazen does Zazen. And it's not I am patient. It's patience. Patience is working on me. Patience is working on me. not me on it. That's how he puts it. And when everyone is up in arms, we can sink into patience. This is the message of the Paramita. Somehow we can just sink. We can just be. We can remain as a seated Buddha. Once I was going on a trip that I was really worried about, and I was talking to my therapist about it, and she said, just remember, you always have your consciousness. And these words, we can just be, just sink in to patience and just be. Remind me of that. So here's another story about patience. I think you're going to appreciate the story. It features Rahula, the Buddha's son, and also one of his 10 great disciples, and also Shariputra, Buddha's foremost disciple. So Buddha had 10 great disciples. We can talk about this another time, but each one featured a different virtue. And Rahula was one of the 10, and Shariputra was his absolute foremost disciple, and his virtue was wisdom. So here's this other story. After some prompting by the Buddha, Shariputra and Rahula regularly went on their alms rounds together. You know, this is begging. The young novice followed close behind his elder so that Shariputra knew what offerings Rahula received and could look after him. Rahula was just basically a child. So on one alms round, Shariputra took Rahula to the city of Shravasti, where they encountered a malicious man who placed sand in Rahula's bowl. This is begging for food now. So sand was placed in Shariputra's bowl and used a club to strike Rahula in the head. Shariputra turned to see Rahula, whose head was bleeding, as he fumed with rage. The elder Bhikshu comforted Rahula. Rahula, if you are a disciple of the Buddha, you must learn patience. Never harbor the poison of hatred in your heart, and pity sentient beings with a heart of compassion. The Buddha often teaches us that as practitioners of the Buddha's teachings, we must be patient even in the face of dishonor and disgrace. Suppress your anger, Rahula, and adhere to patience. There is nothing more heroic in the world than this. There is no power in heaven or earth that can surpass patience. After hearing Shariputra's teaching, Rahula went beside the water and studied his reflection. He silently scooped up the water to wash away the blood. When Shariputra saw this, his mind became calm yet sad. Restraining his emotions, Rahula returned to Shariputra and said, "The pain I felt a moment ago has now been cast aside, but there are too many evil people in this world doing too many horrible things. I am not angry at the world, but I feel that there are too many terrible people in the world. The Buddha teaches that we should have great compassion for people and the world, but the violent people in this world only holds us in contempt. Bhikshus practice patience and accumulate lofty virtue, but angry and foolish people think less of us and revere those who are cruel instead. They treat the Buddha's compassionate teachings as if it was a rotting corpse, like when dew from the heavens falls on pigs, pigs still delight in foul places. When the Buddha speaks the truth and provides compassionate teachings to such people, it accomplishes nothing. Shariputra was happy to see the realization Rahula had and repeated Rahula's words to the Buddha. The Buddha was also heartened by this and praised Rahula. The Buddha said, "Those who do not understand patience are unable to see the Buddha. Those who are against Dharma and the Sangha are those who shall fall into the lower realms. Those who have patience when faced with insult are those who are able to know peace and prevent disasters. Those with wisdom to understand the pervasive nature of karma tame the mind of hatred and learn patience. The spirit and truth of the Dharma differs from that of worldly views. That which the world considers precious is considered lowly in the Buddhist teachings. Dedication and corruption cannot accept one another. The deviant are jealous of the true. Evil abhors good. The greedy cannot abide by the path of no desire. Because of this, those who practice the path must have patience. Patience leads one to advance on the path and propels one swiftly to enlightenment. Patience is like a ship on the sea, able to cross over all calamities. Patience is like the medicine to the ill, able to preserve life. It is because my heart is able to be at peace and know the preciousness of the virtuous practice of patience that I have been able to attain Buddhahood and travel the three realms." Shariputra and Rahula were overwhelmed with gratitude upon hearing the Buddha's teaching. I like this story because Rahula, I think, shows feelings that most of us have. And it's wonderful to see how they were dealt with by Shariputra, who's foremost in wisdom of all of Buddha's disciples and the Buddha. Here are some of the most important points on today's talk on patience. First, discursive thought on the Dharma should be encouraged. Second, the analogy for patience is the ocean. Whatever happens, the ocean cannot be disturbed. It remains the same all the time. I'm thinking even those huge waves that surfers surf on calm themselves at the end. They calm themselves. Third, patience means you wait a minute. You wait and see what happens. It means not coming to conclusions too quickly. It means, and hear this, it means being patient with yourself first. It means being patient with yourself first. So when you get angry, you're patient with yourself for being angry. Just be patient. And the fourth one, instead of regarding little things that happen to us as bad, we can include them in our practice of patience. So this little disturbing, irritating thing happened, you know, you broke a glass in the kitchen. You just say, never mind, I'm going to get a broom and sweep up all the glass and just sweep the dust away. That's all. And fifth, when everyone is up in arms, we should sink into patience. This is the message of the Paramita. Somehow we can just sink. We can just be. We can remain as a seated Buddha. And some of the things to think about and just reflect. You can pick even just one of these. And just like in the phrase, sweep the dust away, if you really understand even one of these, the speed at which you'll integrate these teachings will be so much faster. So first, dedicate. I was going to say one day, and then I decided one morning, and then I decided 1 hour, dedicate 1 hour to noticing each occasion that requires patience. I believe you will be surprised at their quantity, one right after the other. At least that's what I've noticed. You know, I'll tell myself I'm going to practice patience. And then, you know, suddenly there's five things in a row that require patience. So just notice, it's very interesting. And secondly, when someone is angry, think of it as your chance to practice patience. You can breathe in the anger, and not only that, you can project goodness. Thinking of someone else's anger as your opportunity is certainly different. And so try it. Just try it. See what happens. It's an experiment. Just try being patient instead of angry back. Third, about aggression, Rinpoche says, if you give in to the person, they no longer have a reference point for their aggression. And if they think they're punching solid rock, they become more aggressive. But if they find the rock is a pile of balloons, they think they're stupid. But if you find you simply cannot give in, if you just can't give in, study yourself closely and determine the obstacle, because it could be pride or you have to always be right. Study yourself and make sure, because without this information, you won't be able to change for the better. You need this information. So if you're one of those people who just can't give in, you've got to get back. You've got to, you know, raise the ante and get everything more hyper. Find out why. Really, really study that. Fourth, remember that the most important thing is not what happens to us, but how we use what happens to us, how we work with what happens to us. So the next time you're angry, take the opportunity to explore how that arose. Where did your anger come from? what's the history, how you worked it out, and how you felt afterwards. Just be super analytical about the whole thing. Study it. That can be really useful. And fifth, this phrase of Shantideva, like a 12th century poet and practitioner, patience is working on me, not me on it. Remember that. Patience is working on me, not me on it. Zazen does Zazen. And sixth, is there a difference in the patience required in the story of Rahula versus the story of Kunda Pantaka? Is patience just patience, or is there a difference? So those were two different stories featuring patience. Is there a difference in the patience required in those two stories? That's the last thing that I have for you in terms of reflection, things to reflect on during the week. I wonder if there are any questions.
Thank you, Gail. So the first one that we have is, when you see yourself indulge in anger, there is a tendency to criticize yourself. Patience means you wait a minute. You wait and see what happens. It means not coming to conclusions too quickly. But I know I don't need to wait a minute. I already know what is going to happen. My anger will not go away. If anything, it will grow with time as I feel more and more justified and think less and less of the person for whom I harbor anger. It's like a righteous thing.
What I get from this story is that I wonder if you've ever tried waiting a minute, because waiting a minute means consciousness. It means bringing consciousness to the situation. And if you wait a minute, you'll have a minute of consciousness. And if you wait a few minutes, you'll have even more consciousness. Now you have several minutes of consciousness, and if you allow yourself not to come to a quick conclusion and just go on with your life, the next day you might have a glimmer of being like the ocean, not disturbed by anything, which means you have inherent equanimity and are practicing continual virtue. That practicing continual virtue is really important, because it's your state of mind, and it's what's going to help you progress on the path and eventually attain enlightenment, which is definitely within our capacity to attain. All of this, by the way, does not mean that you don't care. You can care enormously and still not lose your equilibrium. That's all.
Thank you, Gail. So another one that we have is, hi, Gail. Do you define a difference between anger and aggression? To me, it seems that anger is a feeling and aggression is the action based on that feeling. Is there a more helpful way to think about this?
No, actually, I think that's a great way to think about it, because Trungpa Rinpoche says that when we see aggression or when we have aggressive feelings, we should try to get rid of the anger part as soon as possible. And I think that goes along with your understanding. If we can get rid of the anger part, we won't be doing ourselves as much harm as if we've had the whole ball of wax. So I think it's very useful. This is my own feeling, that it's very useful to separate the two and tame your feeling of anger, which has a lot of karmic repercussions. And of course, so does aggression, but anger really is a huge obstacle. It's a huge obstacle to many things, and including patience, which, remember, is the most, there's nothing more beneficial in the whole world, apparently, than patience. I mean, in the whole Buddhist understanding of behavior, patience is top of the line. It's first. And I think it's because it's so hard. You know, for me, definitely, remember the 10 grave precepts? Practicing patience in there is really difficult. So I think you're good to go. That's my answer.
Thank you. So the second one that we had gotten, it says, I think you said last week that patience is the hardest or one of the hardest paramitas for you. Is this based on anger, or is it anger at specific people or specific conditions or something else?
For me personally, it's not really, it's actually not about anger. It's about time. I'll get impatient because I either want to be doing something else and not, you know, cleaning up the floor because I just spilled whatever. It's almost always about time, which is kind of ridiculous. But that's just me personally. I think I would almost say most people, it's about someone said something to them and got them riled, and they just couldn't resist getting riled back or escalating the whole situation. I see that so often, just so often. I can't even tell you. Every day, I would say, as a clinician, I see it almost every day. That's all.
Thank you. So the next question that we have is, I was very moved by your story of your yoga class and a little shocked by the way the teacher handled it. Didn't that make you angry?
You know, I was so humiliated at myself. I mean, discovering that because of trauma, my mind, my brain will not remember movements at all, you know, like in a ballet class, you do whatever, and I can't remember that. And so it was dreadful for me, and I didn't know what to do while everybody was practicing this form that I couldn't do. Had I known that, I didn't know anything about yoga, so had I known that we were doing shadow yoga, and the shadow yoga means this form, I still would have done it because I didn't really know I had this disability until that class. And later, I found out that the other students, everyone else, I wasn't, because I was just, molasses on the floor. I mean, I was just like horrified at finding myself in such a foolish position. And the other students, however, were very upset about the way the teacher treated me. And actually I learned that they secretly thought that he recognized some spiritual quality in me that he didn't have, and he was jealous. That's actually what they thought, which I find hilarious. But anyway, I everyone else in the class was angry except me, who was just too humiliated to be angry. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Gail. So the next one that we have is, I'm not sure I see why the Buddha was so pleased with Rahula's realizations. He just saw that people are evil. What is so impressive about that?
Rahula saw the truth, just like when Siddhartha, that is the Buddha before he was enlightened, Siddhartha left his palatial situation because he had seen an example of sickness, old age, sickness, and death. And he couldn't stand to think that every human being has to go through this. And he wanted to find a way out of this kind of suffering. And so he left the palace and he took off all his palatial clothing and gave them to his assistant and became an ascetic. If Rahula hadn't been able to find the place in himself where he was no longer angry, he wouldn't have been able to receive the teachings of the Buddha that the Buddha then gave to him. So what the Buddha saw was that, number one, Rahula was able to, first of all, he saw the truth. This is the truth. And secondly, I mean, this is how the world is. And secondly, that he was able to release his anger. But he saw reality as reality. And if he hadn't have seen the truth, he would have lost access to the Buddha. But because he did see the truth, the Buddha was able to teach him then. And so then Rahula was able to, with patience, lay down the causes for a better karma. And which would bring him better results, which was verified by his attaining not only enlightenment but becoming one of Buddha's 10 foremost disciples. So it all worked exactly as this teaching describes. That's all.
So the next question that we have is, my struggle with patience is in being patient to let things happen one by one. I often seem to have a long list of things that I need to do. My discursive thoughts involve a lot of organizing and going over this to-do list. Sometimes I can clear my mind by practicing Zazen, but when I stop, the list of things to do is right there again. Are there any helpful tips for nurturing this kind of patience?
when I listen to your question, I feel like several things all at once. One is that it's kind of like the 21st century situation. I mean, just everybody is too busy and everybody is struggling to manage. But that said, if it's endless, if it's just endless and you're never organized in such a way that you've done, that when you go to bed, you've accomplished everything you needed to do in a sane manner that day and able to give your entire attention to each thing, then to rethink your life altogether, and that something needs to be let go of so that there's more room for you to not only do all the things, but do them in a way that allows you to be entirely present with each and everything. That's all we have. You know, that's actually all we have. All we have is our entire presence to give to anything. And so if you're so busy that you can never give your entire presence to anything, you're missing your life. You're basically missing your life. And that's really a pity. One of the big things in Buddhism, a lot of people sort of poo-poo this, but it's a major teaching of Buddhism that to attain a human incarnation, which is the only incarnation where one can attain enlightenment, is a major event. It's a miraculous thing. It's very unlikely, considering all of the beings in the universe that are possible to be other than a human being. So when we achieve that incarnation, we should be so grateful and so aware of using every second to attain enlightenment, which is the one thing that we can do that no one else can do. And being on the Buddhist path is really useful for that. I'm noticing that we're almost out of time, and I think that should be the last question, because I want to remind everybody that next Sunday is daylight savings time and the time falls back. And so just to be aware, you might make a note that next Sunday we'll meet at the official new time, but you'll miss the talk if you're not aware that it's daylight savings time. And I also want to be sure to thank you for being here, and to thank my team, Brendan and Sahar and Brian, for all of the very hard work they do to make these talks possible. Thank you all very much.